of the cell.
20 by 18. Downright spacious compared to some of the holes we've been thrown in.
Jack walked around the walls. He pushed here and prodded there. He sprang up to the window, grasped the bars, hung from them a long moment, then dropped back down to the hard-packed earthen floor. He shook his head gloomily. The morning passed sluggishly. When no one else showed an interest in doing so, Doc stretched out on the bunk and napped, his sword stick held beneath his folded hands. Christy assumed a lotus position, sitting cross-legged, her eyes closed. She tried to balance her heart rate in order to reduce the flow of adrenaline through her body.
Phew, getting hungry. Hope they give a midday meal.
Suddenly, unexpectedly, the small observation panel in the door opened. A sec man's face was framed behind the grillwork.
Everybody get away from the door. Get in there.
A single figure staggered inside. Outside, they glimpsed two sec men, guns at the ready. Fleur regarded everyone with an emotionless stare. Her clothes were in disarray, her hair a wild, unbrushed tangle. A purpling bruise showed on her forehead, and her lower lip was puffy. Her right wrist was encased by a wooden splint, and her left hand was thickly bandaged.
Welcome, my lady of war, to an exclusive club, the Honorable Order of Patsies.
Christy stood and stared at Fleur.
I take it your beloved patriarch snapped his fingers and you were magically transformed from warlord to scapegoat.
Fleur stood motionless.
Or he transformed her into a plant.
Plant? What kind of plant?
A spy. She was planted here to keep a watch on us, to report on any escape plans.
I'm a prisoner just like you. I was betrayed.
Like you betrayed the Indians who rescued you from slavers? It's no sin to betray a betrayer.
Or to kill a killer.
Is that what you want to do?
Can you think of any reason why we shouldn't? You tried to kill Ryan. Twice, in fact.
Fleur didn't respond. She merely stood and stared.
Dead already. So dead.
Is that true, young lady?
Fleur's eye flicked toward Doc's blade, but she didn't react.
For if it is, then you should have no objection to your material shell joining your astral self in the great ether. However, if a spark of vitality still resides within your soul, we may offer you a way to fan that spark into a full blaze.
How?
Plunging the sword into the earthen floor, Doc took note of how deeply it cut.
I have an idea.
Oh, I was afraid you would.
Ryan and Mildred emerged from the shaft and squinted their eyes against the brightness of artificial light. The chamber was immense, nearly the size of the storage area above them, but built in an unusual cylindrical design. It was shaped like a hollow cone, with the apex funneling up overhead. The chamber was tri-level, with two floors above their position. Banks of consoles ran the length of each. Brilliant overhead lights gleamed on the alloyed handrails, the glass-covered panels and meters. Chairs were attached to slideways so the console operators could be ferried from panel to panel. A quick count told Ryan that each level contained a dozen chairs, but none of the chairs was occupied. Six chrome-capped glass tubes, each one 10 feet long and 3 feet around, were positioned at equidistant points on the top level of the cone-shaped chamber. The tubes were filled with a churning, bubbling green liquid, flexible metal conduits extending from their tops and bottoms. The conduits extended from the bases of the tubes and disappeared into sleeve sockets on the deck. Beetles flew over the consoles. Ryan quickly handed Mildred the ID badge he had taken from Doug, but none of the gadgets paid any notice to them. It was very cold in the room, well below freezing. Gingerly, Mildred and Ryan peered over a handrail. Far below, perhaps 100 feet, was a dark metal framework surrounding 6 gargantuan fan units. 4 of them were spinning, 2 were not. And Ryan estimated that the 3 fan blades of each unit were close to 20 feet long and 10 wide. Surveying the upper levels, they saw 12 open shaft ways like the one they had used to reach the chamber.
What the hell is this place?
I'm not sure. An air circulation station. But it can't be the only one in an installation this size.
The Beatles haven't noticed this.
They're probably not supposed to. More than likely, their sole program is to maintain the operations.
Why are those things doing it, since this place was designed for humans?
Lack of manpower to spare. Easier to automate, I can't say.
A couple of grins might knock those fans out, stop warming this place up.
The wind is almost gale force. Unless you find something to weigh down the Grins, they'll probably be blown right back up here. Besides, those containers of coolant must be pumped into a conversion chamber below the fans. If we want to start a thaw, we need to prevent the flow of coolant.
Ryan lifted his Sig Sauer, but Mildred tugged at his arm.
This isn't right, Ryan. Our plan was to try and strike a deal with the commander, remember?
Yeah, but his rats might gnaw us to death before we reach him. If this is only one of their stations, shooting out one or two of these coolant containers shouldn't putrefy the whole place. Only show them what we can do if they screw around with us.
Do it! We can't stay here much longer or we'll freeze!
Ryan aimed for the center of the nearest tube.
Fire blast! It didn't even crack!
Must be armaglass, or something very close to it.
A small network of cracks appeared.
Now we're getting somewhere.
The glass cracked, and green fluid began sliding down the tube's exterior and crawling down the conduit. Immediately, an overhead light went from white to red, and the beetle's smooth hovering motions became hurried and frantic.
Shit! Their instruments must have registered a drop in the coolant level. Time to go!
They chose a shaft at random and were grateful for the lessening of the cold. Squeezing through the passage, the darkness grew almost absolute. The lateral shaft terminated in another elbow joint, and Mildred wasn't happy that it crooked straight downward rather than up. Ryan squatted at the lip of the upside-down L.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. The air has to be circulated to all levels of the anthill. I'm just not crazy about climbing down into God knows what.
Ryan put his feet on the ladder rungs.
Can't figure that it's much different than climbing up into God knows what.
The shaft eventually terminated in another elbow, joining with a passageway branching off to the left. They were able to walk side by side along this one. As they did, they passed several smaller openings. Presently, they detected a faint radiance ahead, and as they went farther down the shaft, the light grew brighter. A metal-meshed grill stood in front of them. They approached it in a crouch and peered through the screen. They looked down on a miniature city. They saw buildings with foundations of brick and concrete, narrow paths twisting and turning between the squat structures. None of the buildings looked like they could comfortably fit a child, much less a full-grown adult. It looked like a model of a pre-dark city, shrunk in volume and reduced in scale. In the center was an obelisk tower made of white stone, stretching upward about 25 feet. The city, if it could be called that, was empty and devoid of life. Ryan pressed his face closer to the grill, looking from the left to the right. Almost directly below them was a metal pole, and topping the pole was a rectangular green sign with white lettering.
Pennsylvania Avenue.
Sweet Jesus! It's a scale model of Washington, D.C. That's supposed to be the Capitol building, and that tower is the Washington Monument.
Bastard weird hobby. These freezies have way too much time on their hands.
Crazy as shithouse rats.
Got that right. Let's move.
Feeling around on the inside of the hatch cover, Ryan found a slide lock. They were about 20 feet above the floor, but only 5 from the arched roof of a strange building supported by Doric columns. There was the statue of a seated man inside it.
A baby-sized Lincoln Memorial.
Both of them jumped to the roof of the miniature memorial and clambered down to the floor. They walked carefully down Pennsylvania Avenue, looking for any movements or signs of life.
You know, if I could have imagined a place that had become a refuge for survivors of the New Cost, trying to evade death and retain some semblance of their former lives, this would be the place.
The ceiling was fairly high, perhaps 50 or more feet, tapering upward to armatures holding electric light fixtures. Very few of the buildings were more than 6 feet tall, and Ryan and Mildred felt uneasy striding among them like giants. Ryan had only seen pictures of America's capital city, and walking through a toy version of it disturbed him for reasons he couldn't identify. Mildred, of course, had visited D.C. before Skydark and remembered it well.
There were giants in the earth in those days.
Don't you start. One of the reasons I accepted this job from Hellstrom was the prospect of getting away from Doc and his damn quotes.
Sorry. It's only natural for the child of a preacher to quote scripture. Besides, if Doc was with us, he'd be talking some obscure shit about Gulliver and Lilliput.
The room containing the city was so long that its far end was indistinguishable in the shadows. There didn't seem to be any doors or any way out. Suddenly, Ryan felt